I hear what you're saying, and I follow your arguments, but you're wrong. Here's Why by Ian Wolfe.
Pass these tough guides to the singularity around and maybe share them a little bit. A couple of concepts written by Charles Stross. I'll just get myself into the mode here with the extra props as we go, just the belt to get into the future. Let's see. Deadly serious here. Plasma. So,
is that for women looking in Christ?
It's kind of hypnotic. So, one of the things, of course, is John referred to the fact that aren't we in all some sense already a lot of us transhumans because we use tools, we use knowledge and techniques that have already changed us beyond what we evolved to be maybe 100,000 years ago. So that's part of the cheat sheet is I'll say yes, and a lot of it is, of course, we want the skinny before we want to sit here for 20 minutes because you want the process. So cheat sheet, the impatient. Transhumanism light is living a healthy, long life with using science and technology to help you reach your full physical and cognitive potential, whatever that might lead to. So that's the soft pedal version that a lot of people might agree with. Transhumanism hard is translating everything that makes you you into software, perhaps, uploading that into perhaps a virtual reality situated on a mega computer in a shell of supercomputer around the sun, engineered from spare matter lying around the solar system. So there's a bit of extremes in the movement of what people want. Some people just want humanity plus, and some people want extreme abilities that may or may not be physically possible. So transhumanism is an international movement which regards involuntary aspects of the human condition, which has usually been thought of for millennia as being the way things are, such as disability, suffering, disease, aging, drudge work, and involuntary death, as unnecessary and undesirable. So for a start, this goes against the philosophy of a lot of human history, where this is just the way things were. You couldn't want things another way. So transhumanists support the use of science and technology to improve human mental and physical characteristics and capacities. They see research into increasing intelligence as causing accelerated technological development. Computer scientist Bernard Dingy has suggested that when acceleration gets fast enough, the acceleration of technological progress, that it could form a technological singularity, a point either at which we can do anything we can imagine and get the technology that quick, or one which would be a point beyond which it would be difficult for present-day humans to imagine what's going on because there's so much new stuff that we couldn't imagine from where we are now. So, for example, today's online world is one that would be difficult to describe to someone from a few hundred years ago. Could they really understand our choices? How attractive and incredible would the life of a 1970s filing clerk be to a peasant from the 15th century who was in danger of being killed by his aristocratic masters and didn't have enough to eat of all the very limited choices he had at the time? The singularity may make possible technological utopias, or it might unleash destructive forces. Sociologist James Hughes said that the best possible post-human future to get beyond the human condition is achievable only by ensuring that human enablement technologies are safe and available to everyone, and respecting the right of individuals to have control of their own bodies, so you don't force anyone to make changes they don't want, and you don't stop anyone making changes they do want. So transhumanism respects reason, science, and its commitment to progress. Opposing this are the bioconservatives, who see altering humanity as a threat, even if it means a greater working memory, or faster muscles, or longer, healthier lives. Not everyone sees these goals as desirable. So again, a bit of a summary. The key accelerationist technologies that people currently think will make a big difference and maybe lead to is the acceleration of intelligence that will lead to faster technologies. Nanotechnology has been promised from everything from just basic medicine to magic pixie dust, which you'll see in the little description there. A lot of science fiction writers have used it to allow almost anything that's physically possible to be done with technology. They might be right, but nanotechnology has come to the point at the moment where it's gone from being a totally science fictional idea to being just another option on the applied science degree. Cognitive enhancement, whether that's from drugs or training or from computers, brain-computer interfaces, machine intelligence, space migration, cosmic engineering, doing things in space technologically, faster computers, perhaps quantum computers, life extension, because if we can live longer, we can accumulate more wisdom and achieve more, and something that's not often mentioned is a new thing coming about, cornucopia, or what's also on the list there is a Christmas tree machine, which is an extension of 3D printing technology, where you could potentially have a factory on a desktop that could make drugs, could make electronics, could make almost anything. So Woody Allen had the transhumanist thought that some people wish to achieve immortality through their works or through their descendants. I wish to achieve immortality by not dying. So I'll launch into a bit of history. Now this is, when I eventually give this to John, I'll have a big block of reference here because this is almost straight cut and paste because I didn't structure my time as well as I would have liked. And so I can't immediately give you the person I'm quoting. Sorry, but I will. Transhumanism has pre-Enlightenment roots. So as John's hinting, it's not just a new 21st century, even a 1970s phenomenon. Our earliest ancestors sought to transcend the limitations of the human body, to delay death and to achieve wisdom. So transhumanism arose when people began to use science and technology to achieve their goals, instead of magic and spirituality. So enlightened philosophers, such as Diderot and Condorcet, suggested that eventually we could achieve radical longevity, machine intelligence, freedom from drudgery, and the radical evolution of the human form. So the Enlightenment idea of progress, the belief that we can continually improve our condition through rational scientific human agency, also has a political dimension. The Enlightenment argued for democracy and individual rights. The French version of these ideas also pressed for egalitarianism and a strong democratic state, while the Anglo and American versions were less egalitarian and advocated market freedom instead of individual freedom. The tensions between these two versions of Enlightenment are a continuing dynamic within the contemporary transhumanist movement. There was a time when the libertarians were kind of the American mixture of right-wing and left-wing at the same time, the radical individualists who want no government and absolute individual freedom and market freedom were the main voices in transhumanism. But that's no longer the case. The left has recovered. So the history of this is that... the resistance to Enlightenment ideas that began 300 years ago still shapes resistance to transhumanist meliorism, which is the word I was telling you the other week I had to look up. Meliorism is the improvement of the human condition, or the idea that you can improve the human condition, which goes against the religious idea that you shouldn't try to improve the human condition because this is the way God has set things up, all the gods have set things up, and to do so is blasphemy. So religious conservatives reject the humanist claim that progress can be achieved through purely human agency and predict dire consequences for hubris. On the other hand, political authoritarians, especially those growing out of Enlightenment roots, have embraced and advocated for some transhuman projects. A particularly nasty example was the widespread adoption early in the 20th century of eugenics by both the left and the right, leading to the systematic and coercive sterilisation of hundreds of thousands of people with alleged genetic faults. Now, after World War II and the revelation of what the Nazis did, people had a widespread revulsion to this sort of idea, and in the left generally to buy utopian ideas. They associated all of this with what the Nazis did. So the left was pushed further towards a romantic technophobia by environmentalism. So there was a green rejection of technology and science as a solution. So that meant that the anti-corporate, anti-military new left, the spiritual and pastoral counterculture, and the intellectual attacks on the Enlightenment and postmodernists pushed the left right away from these ideas. So there were still strains of transhumanist meliorism in ideas such as psychedelic liberation, alternative technology, and post-scarcity anarchism. As a consequence of left techno-scepticism, neoliberals and market anarchists, the libertarian individualists, were prominent advocates for techno-utopianism in the 70s and 80s. From the corporate futurists to the anarcho-capitalists who dreamt of independent states in space and on abandoned oil rigs. Then as email and the web began to connect technophiles worldwide in the 1990s, the neoliberal Extropy Institute, founded by Max Moore, emerged to organise transhuman advocates. In reaction to the free market views of the Extropy Institute, the European transhumanists organised a broader world transhumanist association in the late 1990s. They include both social democrats and neoliberals around a liberal democratic definition of transhumanism, which they codified in a declaration of transhumanism. So you've ended up with the Bush administration, the religious right, and the emergence of a left-right bio-conservative axis, people who want things not to change, the technology not to change people. So you've got lots of people who were pushed by that to join the transhumanist movement. So you've got bioethicists such as John Harris and Julian Savulescu in the UK, who joined with Arthur Kaplan, Henry Greeley, and Gregory Pence in defense of reproductive cloning, germinal choice, and cognitive enhancement. So this is all these reproductive technologies. So there's people advising governments around the world now about whether or not we should have access to stem cells, to cloning, to changing our children's genes, all these sort of things that were just science fictional ideas last century are now government policy. So the transhumanists and the Transhumanist Association have more than 5,000 members in 100 countries. And they're rediscovering the egalitarian strain of Enlightenment thought. So they're finding now that polls find that about half are on the left, from communists and left anarchists to American liberals, while only a quarter are on the economic right, from anarcho-capitalists to euro-liberals. But almost all transhumanists are in agreement on cultural politics. So there's a huge diversity of opinion on what should happen, and that led to a lot of skirmishes. Religious people are generally against transhumanist goals, but there are exceptions. There are now the Mormon Transhumanist Association. They see immortalism and the singularity as fulfillment of Mormon prophecy. So they're for it. In 2009, the group Conservatism Plus has organised a network for transhumanists who support libertarian, conservative, minarchists, Republican or otherwise conservative viewpoints. So there are right-wing transhumanists as well who are getting organised. Perhaps transhumanism for the minority. So for some in the developing world, transhumanism appears as the Enlightenment on steroids, an ideology that invests national technological and biomedical progress with revolutionary ambitions. For others, such as Asians, the Western biopolitical polarisation appears to be irrelevant because there's little resistance to radical applications of technology. Why not? And less enthusiasm for radical individualism. So finally, on the political front, there have emerged internal tensions between those who would like to reframe transhumanism to make it less threatening, less aggressive sounding, and those who defend its more radical and futuristic ambitions. So there's a bit of rebranding going on. It's people who just call themselves, well, the Transhumanist Association are arguing at the moment they should rebrand themselves as Humanity Plus, which is, I believe, they called their journal. And they're debating just not calling it transhumanism, but just the idea of post-human, well, not even that, just longevity and cognitive enhancement. So you just give everybody what most people can agree, that perhaps we should live healthier lives, maybe a little bit longer than we have, and if we've got things that get in the way, such as dementia or intellectual or emotional intelligence problems, that we should solve all those, bring everybody up to where they could be. And it's not as threatening as saying, well, actually, the Order of Cosmic Engineers have issued their own Yes to Transhumanism manifesto and they want to build giant computers in space, upload their minds. So all these sort of science fictional ideas about, you know, uploading and amplifying your intelligence, machine intelligence, this all leads to singularity, which has now become a hot topic in its own subgenre of science fiction. Which is kind of ironic because part of the idea of the singularity is that you can't predict what happens after the singularity from here. So there's, you know, increasingly it's difficult to imagine what might happen in the future because we just don't know about the new discoveries and the new technology and how they'll change our thinking. So Timothy Leary in the 70s summarised his philosophy of this with an acronym, SMILE, which was Space Migration Intelligence Squared, which is intelligence studying intelligence, and life extension. But given all these things, we might be able to escape from our history. So in 1965, statistician I.J. Good predicted that there'd be an intelligence explosion when the first applications of intelligent amplification became possible. Because the more intelligent you become, the greater your ability to become more intelligent once you start understanding how it works. So this applies to humans becoming more than humanly bright, or to machine intelligences who can start designing their successors. or hacking their own software. So humans have the advantage of our evolved intelligence to start from. Machines, if it's possible for machine intelligence, have the advantage that they can implement it on any substrate. They can just redesign their own brains to be faster and better using the state of the art. Professor Bernard Vinci, who coined the term singularity, basically said this exponential growth in technology just going straight up, that's a singularity. Beyond that point, we can only guess what it might be like. Professor Robin Hanson proposes that there have been multiple singularities in the past, all through history, that each one has dramatically affected the growth rate of the economy. So there's been an agricultural and industrial revolution in the past, and these have been technological singularities. And the future one might increase economic growth between 60 and 250 times, is his guess. Again, it's a guess. He's suggesting an innovation that allowed for the replacement of almost all human labour could trigger this event. So, radical automation. Werner Vinge predicts that superhuman intelligences, however, by which I mean intelligences beyond the brightest human, they don't have to be much brighter, just got, you know, 20, 30, 50 points higher, maybe 100 points higher, it's a little bit more bright. They'll be able to enhance their own minds faster than the humans that created them. So when greater than human intelligence drives progress, then it'll be more rapid because there's a feedback loop. More progress, more intelligence, faster progress, on it goes. So most proposed methods for creating smarter than human or transhuman minds are intelligence amplification, which could be bioengineering engineering, could be nootropic drugs that make you smarter or more creative or concentrate better, like Ritalin, for example, has been used in universities now, off-label illegally to help people study. AI assistance, like your little pocket computer that reminds you of things, tells you things, finds information for you, collates it together so there's less reading for you to do. Direct brain computer interfaces. One of these is becoming available later this year. There's an Australian invention of an EEG device that sits on your head. It's about $200 to $300. It's initially designed to go into computer games, so you'll be able to lift little building blocks, levitate them with your mind on the screen. You get the sensation that you're doing something telekinetic. So to change the way you think, it'll pick up the readings, be able to control things on the computer without words or typing. An extension of the mouse. So there's all these different things that ultimately leading up to the idea that we could transfer human minds to a machine brain or to a virtual simulated community. So, you know, sort of like the Matrix only voluntary when you still have access to the real world. A bit of level of control on how real the simulation is, what we do. So, although this has been a staple of science fiction and futurists, the concept of the singularity is still pretty speculative. It's a chain of reason that everybody subscribes to. It's been criticised as pseudoscience, and some sceptics have sneered at it as the rapture of the nerds. Because it's got some things in common. You know, either everything's going to be wonderful, or we're all going to go up, and it's going to be... Charles Stross, in his little thing there, talks about how one... You know, he writes in science fiction that it's taking place during the singularity, or just after. And he jokes in his little FAQ about, you know, there'll be jam fatigue every day. It'll be really good. So robotics researcher Hans Moravec argues that although superintelligence in the form of machines may make humans in some sense obsolete as top intelligence, there will still be room in the ecology for humans. The Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence is dedicated to developing machine intelligences that are friendly to humanity. They're actually looking into artificial morality and ethics. Because it's one of the dangers people see, you know, it's the Terminator scenario, that the AIs could wipe us out. The other things people are worried about is nanotechnology that could become, if nanotechnology, little tiny atom-sized little, well, made of several atom-sized, little tiny, tiny micro-machines, if they can reproduce themselves out of easily available materials, that might be all they end up doing if they go astray, rather than being little medicines or little factories or all sorts of little sensors, they might just make more of themselves and you end up with a great goo scenario where the whole Earth gets eaten up by little nanomachines and just make more nanomachines. So the Foresight Institute thinks you shouldn't go for AI first. Basically, the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence, like, get a friendly AI first and then you can control the nanotechnology and everything else and it won't be a problem. Foresight Institute saying no. Bit worried about the AIs, let's control the nanotechnology first and then we'll know what we're doing. So Hawkins writes that there are mind steps involved in singularities, dramatic and irreversible changes to worldviews, and they're accelerating in frequency. So he says there's inventions of writing, changed history, changes the way humans are. Reading and writing become generally available to almost everybody in the world. Mathematics, the computer, and so on. Kurzweil sees an accelerated change. He's got a movie coming out, and he's got his book called The Singularity. And then there's all these different, there's critics of the potential dangers. People say machine intelligence is impossible, that we could never simulate a brain no matter how fast computers get. And ultimately, there's the dangers of superhuman AIs who may not like us. There's people saying that, there's the infeasibility I just mentioned, there's hubris, we shouldn't do it because it's too arrogant, or God might not like it, or we don't really know what the consequences are if we really mess it up. Contempt of flesh, saying that why do you really want to upload your mind into something that's not a human body, or improve your body so much that it's not the same? Aren't you really just submitting to cultural norms that you should be resisting? Or what made you not going to be a human, trivialization of human identity? Which is also known as the enough argument. We're about where we should be now. We shouldn't change humans too much in the future. It's all right to use medicine and antibiotics, but maybe not life extension. There's the genetic divide, the Gattaca argument. You can end up with classes in society, depending on your genes, if you've been modified or not, or if you're at risk of developing some illnesses or not. There's also the Brave New World argument, which is very similar, that says democracy and equality could be at risk. Dehumanization, the Frankenstein argument. There could be a blurring between humans and artifact, or the creation of subhuman slaves. There could be coercive eugenicism. There are existential risks, the Terminator argument. And right now there are people doing all sorts of things. Professor Steve Mann is online 24/7 with wearable computers and an ITAP system that has a camera with a constant feed of what he sees. It also feeds things into his retina. They look like ordinary glasses with a little line across. He's a professor of cybernetics who's pioneering the research. There are AIs that develop Newton's laws from the dislocation of a pendulum that reproduce everything. There are AIs that have also discovered biological compounds and systematically checking things. So there's some simple scientific discovery being done by simple AIs. There are brain prosthetics that can replace minor parts of the brain. They reproduce the input and the output, but not the mechanism that the brain uses, but they produce, so they're going to be able to replace little bits that are broken. And Hans Moravec has successfully copied the neural connections of spiny lobsters to a computer neural network. So he's actually, technically, he's uploaded the minds of the lobsters. So there's people who argue, well, if you can do it with lobsters, maybe it's not that far to go to more advanced animals once we start getting Moore's Law accelerating the computers. Kurzweil sees it by 2020, which of course just happens to be the same year that all the governments want to get humans back on the moon. And ultimately, access to the internet's research engine like Google is a brain prosthetic that would make any computer literate person from the present day seem like a super genius to someone from early last century. And if you had a conversation between someone from 1900 and they asked you questions, well, I'll refer you.
No.
You're just shaking your head.
I'm just thinking.
Fair enough. In The Singularity Is Near by Ray Kurzweil, he has an imaginary conversation. You may or may not find it convincing, but I recommend you have a look. He has someone from the early 20th century, someone from the present, and someone from his projected 2020. And the conversations about what they can do. And they're not genuinely more brilliant. It's the technology they have to assist them. And ultimately, there's hyper-connectivity. The fact that more people have reading, writing, and access to all of human knowledge on the internet, where more people are encouraged to create and swap ideas, not just the idea leaders. And through everybody being on the internet, perhaps we'll end up with those big collaborative efforts that will also change the way we do things and how fast we can find solutions to the internal problems. And that's transhumanism as an introduction.
So now we have the customary 10 minutes of questions and comments. You're not confined to questions, you can challenge the speaker. But just remind you, if you keep your interchange, if you want an interchange, quite brief, so that we try and get to most people around the room.
Hello.
Yes?
So what was the purpose of Francisans and striving to be Francisans?
Well, it's striving to overcome the traditional limits, the traditional things that people have suffered from. So all these involuntary things. The idea that you could have them all voluntary. You don't have to suffer, you don't have to die, you don't have to be disabled, you don't have to do drudge work. All those sort of things.
But why? I mean, sorry, but why would you want to do that?
Well, would you?
Why would a transhuman want?
Because people who choose transhumanism see those things as undesirable. That's part of the philosophy, that these things are undesirable. That there are things that you haven't chosen to suffer from, limitations you haven't chosen, like being disabled, like being sick, or having a short lifespan, or having a limited IQ, whatever those things are. Or having intellectual deficits if you've got some sort of problem.
So to clarify, to avoid undesirable and to endeavor towards the desirable.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I'm interested in what you were saying about uploading brains to a machine. It's a speculative idea, but I really like the sound of it. But one thing I would say is, if you had your mind uploaded into a brain, it wouldn't be you, it would be someone else.
Asimov's dealt with that one.
Yeah, because if you uploaded your brain into a machine, and let's say you kept on living yourself for a while,
that's the cloning.
There'd be one of you, and then there'd be another of you, and there could be potentially more of you.
Absolutely.
So there's not, you will not know what your clone in the machine is doing.
Well, that's been thought through. There's two ways around this. One is Asimov's solution to this was that instead of just copying your mind over as completely as you can, so there's two of you, the one in the computer and the living one, his idea was that you do it gradually, that you basically add bits to your brain so you think with the machine, so it's an augmentation, and then as bits of your brain fail, you switch them over to the machine, so that by the time it all fails, it's so slowly gone over, that's still you.
Oh.
And there's only ever one of you, unless you choose to switch off the meat bit at some point, then you're not using very much anymore by that point. So this is the other one is that, of course, once you can copy minds, and if you're on a machine, if you're all in software, there's no reason why there shouldn't be more than one of you, unless that's considered a culturally bad thing or an ethically bad thing for some reason. You could potentially split off into two, go and be in two places at once, experience two different things. You could merge your memories later. There's all sorts of possibilities. Or you could be separate individuals after that time with individual rights, depending on how divergent you just considered.
You could multiply to such an extent that you have almost an infinite human population.
Well, in software, there's not such limits necessarily.
Yeah.
It's speculation, but people have thought through maybe ideas of how this might work. JB?
Oh, yes. Question is, as you put it seems that transhumanism will happen whether you want it or not. The science is making progress, the technology is making progress. So what are transhumanists doing here? They are not making it happen. It's happening.
What? So
why do a group of people love to stick this label to themselves? You are transhumanists. Whereas all the real progress are happening by technologists and scientists that may or may not want to classify themselves as transhumanists.
Well, this is the thing. Why would you seek life extension if you don't think it's a good idea?
Oh, you can sell it.
Well, unless you
can make a lot of money.
Sure, sure. So,
I mean,
potentially,
I see drivers, but
somebody has to
be other than philosophical drivers.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, why not medical companies seek life extension? They can sell it.
No, but who do they sell it to? Who's the market?
Millionaires.
No,
millionaires.
My argument is,
come on, you don't have to sell that to anyone. Well, let's bring it up.
Jack, well, let's answer your question.
The answer is, there's two things. One is, people who want to live a long time going after one of the transhumanist goals. They would include the transhumanists are a market for this. So that's a driver for people who are just going after profit, is they want to sell to the people who want to buy it. And these are the people who want to buy it. So one, it's creating a market, but also an awful lot of these people are researchers. They are technologists, they are engineers, they are scientists. And they're actually doing the research. Hans Moravec is the guy who was talking about singularity earlier, who's also the guy who's uploaded the neurology of the lobsters. So these people are working on it. So the questions that John was asking, a lot of this stuff has come from philosophers and futurists first. or science fiction writers acting in that sort of role before the technology came along. Eric Drexler, the guy who invented nanotechnology and hyperlinking, by the way, thanks for the web, he dealt with this theoretically first. So it was a philosophy, it was an idea, it was speculation, and then he worked out how to do it, and then he published, and now everyone uses it. So you've got to think of it first, and you've got to talk to other people, and you've got to share the ideas and explore what potential problems or opportunities might be. And that's the role of this as well. There are the people who control the big business and government go where the voices are, not just where the money is. And the religious conservatives are very loud. So at the top levels, there are people trying to stop a lot of these goals because they see it as a bad thing. I mean, what happened? You know, there are consequences for government policy. What happens to pensions and superannuation when people are living to 100? They're living longer. So there's all these questions that people need to think about. And this is where there's a role for people who think about these things, to talk about it with policy and with technologists and to get on with either making it happen or making sure if it's going to happen anyway, then it doesn't happen in a way that we don't like.
So you're an activist for the lobbyists.
That's the idea, yeah. So you can look up the Transhumanist Association online. You can read Charles Stross. There's a whole... I can give you a reading list once I write this up with the references. There's a lot of science fiction writers, there's a lot of non-fiction writers that have written about this, there's a lot to find out. This is just an introduction that barely skimmed the surface. Ray Kurzweil's book, which is quite dense, goes into great detail to convince you that the technology and the science is there for all these steps, that it's all solid, that you really can not just simulate but emulate a human brain on the coming computers. And all these other steps, you know, longevity, intelligence amplification, all these things that they're possible, machine intelligence that they're possible. So I've only just outlined it. I haven't tried to convince you that they're really going to happen.
Really, really interesting subject. And as John and Jack brought up, it seems like the way that technological and medical advances are continuing, that it's headed towards transhumanism anyway. And I guess I'm interested in what the bounds of transhumanism are. For example, if somebody chooses, further than just medical or technological advances, say artistic or aesthetic advances, would that be classified as transhumanism, or does that come under a different sort of...
That comes under transhumanism because they want to modify themselves. So there's a sense in which people have always done something like that, but there's also another sense in which technology now, plastic surgery allows you... There's people who've decided they want horns, there's people who've decided they want to look younger, there's people who want to decide they want a different colour skin. There's all sorts of things that people just decided they don't want their bodies the way they are, or the transgender people. All of these would come under the umbrella of controlling your body the way you want, using the latest technology.
So whereas the technological and medical advances, you could actually put a label, a actual number on, how more advanced they are. Whereas something that's a little more aesthetic, you might not be able to show how that's of any more benefit than just sort of an emotional benefit to the person.
That's right.
But that would still be classified as a benefit under
it's about having control over things that previously in your life, control over your own life, that you, things that were out of your control. So you can, if you can choose to some degree how you look, then that's giving you control over things traditionally you haven't had. Now, a lot of people would think that's not as high a priority as fixing disabilities or living longer or being smarter or having a better memory or better concentration, all sorts of things. But the idea is it's an individual choice. And that's why there's issues about the access to this technology and the priorities of where the funding goes and all that sort of thing. There's mountains of issues I haven't touched on thinking about this because this is just an introduction.
There are mountains of issues you haven't touched on, I think.
That's right.
Like, presumably this is for the whole planet. We're all going to live forever. I don't know how we're going to fit, because we're badly overcrowded for years. We can't even feed people, let alone think of it. And well, the other thing is, what do you mean by intelligence? That is such a vague term that to me it is meaningless, because it's not intelligence, it's wisdom. It's what you extract, and I don't believe that any computer can ever do that.
Fair enough. Well, that's something that you might have to be convinced of by the
other. Yeah, you might have to be convinced of it.
Perhaps. I mean, for example, if someone came along and said, look, we've got the technology, we can copy your brain, and it can do everything you can do. You have to be convinced.
Yeah, but what's the point?
Well, the point of it is...
If I'm quite happy with my brain, which I am.
No, but this is the point, is if you're not happy. If you're not happy because your brain is failing in ways that medicine can't solve it, and therefore there are limits to how long we can prolong life, perhaps, in a frame that we have, this is seen as an alternative for that decay. And if you find problems with your memory, you might want your memory augmented. So you might not go all the way to having a computer simulation of yourself in a virtual reality somewhere in the matrix. You might instead want prosthetics to just boost your memory a little bit. You might just want a little bit more of technology rather than the whole thing.
Technology breaks down, I'm not secret with the paddle, then I go, but then technology doesn't work, which so often it doesn't. Usually when you most want it, it lets you down. So what if you depend on this marvellous synthetic brain?
Well, you have to read the manual, of course.
Your body is technology. Your body is technology.
Oh, now come on, let's not be selfish. Let's not get into...
But the point is, of course, your body can fail as well. Anything can fail. Nothing's guaranteed 100%.
That's right. And the animals and the plants...
It's a risk.
Decay is built into life.
All medical technology has a risk.
Decay is built into life.
Well, that's traditionally been built into life. Not all animals die. Okay? Not all animals age and die.
No.
Not all life ages and dies. It's not a built-in thing. It's something that... at our end of evolution has become useful because you get more generations more quickly, but it's not built into life.
That's
not true. There are trees, there are funguses, there are microorganisms that are millions of years old.
Right, yeah. So nothing ever
decays
and dies.
Well, not every.
Okay. Are we mixing up two different things here? There's enhancing your own mind, which you can get enjoyment from. Is creating another copy of yourself, either in computer or in the flesh, as it were. The test I would apply is if this new you came back and shagged your wife, would you enjoy it or not? To tell you whether it's you or not. It's a very clear distinction.
You might have to ask your wife.
Well, I don't know anyone want to create a copy of themselves if they didn't experience what that new person did.
Well, that's some of what I was talking about with John. There's a couple of solutions to that. One is that you merge the memories later so that you remember being the person who shaved your wife, right? Which means you did it for all intents and purposes, it was you. The alternative is that you have hyperconnectivity, that you're in both places at once, you're inhabiting both bodies. You're experiencing the input stream of both.
There's no basis for that.
What do you mean there's no basis? You can network. Why not?
Because there's you and there's the other one you create.
But if you're sharing...
There's no telepathy.
But you can have electromagnetic equivalents of telepathy. I mean, there's no reason why the information can't be transferred, why you couldn't be... There's no physical reason why this couldn't happen. But we don't have the technology for it now, it's speculative. But in principle, you could have two brains using electromagnetic technology to communicate over a network so fast that they're the same mind. In which case you receive the input from both bodies. You could have a room full of bodies that are all you, simultaneously. These are the sort of things being more than human
so we could
can
all,
be.
So we could all link up to Pamela Anderson's current boyfriend.
Yeah. Well, that's the possibility, the neurological correlates. If you could download memories, buy them off the net, it's...
No, it's not the memories, I want to hear it now. There's a difference.
Well, that's a new type of voyeurism or journalism.
Two more questions.
Sorry, it was your talk. Honestly, it was fabulous. And wouldn't have to be hopping up and down for another year. Well, the only question to find is who I'm killing. I have a viral plague of people-taking narcissists.
Yes.
With money, presumably, to more technology.
A viral plague. I thought you were going for the great goo there.
Replicating narcissists.
consuming new
oh, sure,
products,
sure.
Consuming experiences.
It depends. Sorry.
Yeah, wasn't it on the scale? I don't know.
Oh yes, the library. Yes. Yeah. The idea is they saved all the people who were otherwise going to be killed by uploading them all into the computer's memory. But that's the episode I think you're talking about, which is these sort of ideas exactly, that they saved them all. And then later on they can re-embody them, they have the technology. And so they do, when they work out what's happened, that's what they do, they bring them all back and they re-embody them. But as for the replicating narcissist, most people don't look for the idea of having lots of copies of themselves running around physically. It's not generally been a popular idea. So I'm not sure it's a real danger, but you could add it to the list of potential dangers.
Or even incredibly long-lived narcissists that you can get rid of.
Oh, that's a whole other issue. That's a whole other issue. Yeah, with life extension, that's one of the things. The traditional way, well, there's many ways to get rid of tyrants.
You can't stand in people eventually, they will just pop up and tweak. Like, they will not be here forever, but the idea that
They will be
here forever is really quite unpleasant.
Well, it's all about choice. You choose not to associate with them, you can blank them out.
How do you kill these people?
That's a whole other discussion.
You switch the box.
Edward for the last one?
It's the last one, yeah.
I've got two, but they're not going to be statements that aren't questions. It's actually just questions or statements masquerading. The difference between transhumanism and posthumanism, what you see the differences are there. And when we talk about transhumanism, are we envisaging a situation where we'd be changing our organic form in some way, shape, or form?
Yep.
That humans will become something other than human, however we define it.
Right. I'll answer the second question first. I think as John was hinting, and as I said during the talk, there's a degree to which anything we've made, we're wearing glasses, or contacts, or we've had laser surgery, or we're using antibiotics, or we've learned to read, or we've done a memory system from ancient Greece like mnemonics, that we've made changes to the way we would naturally just have grown, that make us a bit more than the base humans were before these technologies were invented. So there's a degree to that, the transhuman and post-human question. They normally talk about transcendence of human limits. So a post-human, according
trans
to...
Trans is usually used as kind of going beyond.
That's right, going beyond.
Or a crossing bound.
Whereas post is just a little bit after.
Yeah,
it just means the first one is done.
Or that it's supposed to be
so
kind
I'm
of
just trying to see if
I've got... idea, generally.
Yeah.
Comes
the idea generally is that post-humans, perhaps, might get all the playthings. You might have your Christmas tree machine that can make you anything that's there's a design for on the internet. You may have all the your life extension, your intelligence assistance, all sorts of things going on. But you're not fundamentally much different other than all your tools, and perhaps the ideas and the way you think from how you've been educated. You're not fundamentally different from a human now, except you've got all this great new stuff. A transhuman goes into these more extreme ways where you're quite a bit more than a human was before.
So it's a cycle,
perhaps
an example of transhuman.
Could well be, yes. Yeah.
If you'd like to hear more stories, then subscribe on the website www.hereswhy.tk.